It's time for the No Shot Clock Podcast. We're talking the biggest stories in Illinois high school basketball. Now, here are your hosts, Michael O'Brien of the Chicago Sun-Times and Joe Hendrickson of the City Suburban Boost Report.
Welcome in to this season's final episode of No Shot Clock. We wrapped up the season this weekend in Champaign. I had a slight day of rest, which wasn't really much of a rest, and we are going to look back and wrap it all up. Four classes of basketball. What'd you think, Joe? What was your kind of overall feeling after the weekend wrapped up?
I think we knew HF was the favorite going in. And, you know, they just kind of kept proving it over and over and over again with what they accomplished during the regular season, some massive wins. You know, in previewing the final weekend, you kind of go through that list, Mike, of who HF played, who they beat. And in this 23-24 season, I mean, they more than showed that they were the best team in Illinois, you know, repeatedly over and over again. You know, they took their bumps with some hiccups with a couple of a game or two, whether it be a upset loss or a close game where you kind of scratch your head like, well, but it didn't affect the overall, you know, season in any way. And I just came away just thinking that it was clear to me in 4A that HF was the best team. Highlighted by that come from behind super sectional win over what was probably the second best team in 4A, Curie. And then I think DePaul just more than did what they needed to do to prove they were the class, an elite of class 3A. You just can't score on them. And then of course, Phillips was a fantastic story. Phillips kind of snuck up on us, Mike, you know, overall. I mean, I know sometimes, well, I am guilty of it, you know, 1A, 2A, being slighted, no question. But, you know, with what Phillips did, it's pretty impressive. And then my last take from the three champions, what's ahead for next year? All three of those teams, you know, DePaul is going to be the favorite in 3A. Phillips will be the favorite in 2A. And HF with two big guns coming back and Bryce Hurd and Jaden Tyler are poised to, you know, possibly return again to Champaign.
Yeah. I took some, probably my two biggest in the final rankings, took some heat for St. Pat's and took some heat for Phillips. Phillips, I just shoved in at 25 and St. Patrick didn't make it, which, you know, St. Patrick played really well in that super sectional loss to Mount Carmel in overtime. But it just comes down to they didn't have the wins. You know, they didn't beat anybody above them in the ranking. They beat Loyola. That's their big win of the season. And for Phillips, I mean, I know it's tough. They won state and everything, but these are the rankings for the whole season. And I do weigh state heavily. And they just didn't have any kind of a resume, you know, to do those other teams. They were a very good 2A team. They were the 2A champs.
Yes.
But other than that, what am I supposed to do? I can't just shove them above all these teams that beat them during the season. You know, it's so it doesn't look great. It was tough.
Well, and again, I don't want to pick again on 3A, but it is what it is, Mike, with 3A, 4A. And what it is, the depth, and every top 3A team, the cream of the crop, take your five best 3A teams. Thornton, DePaul, Richwoods, Metamora,
Brother Rice,
the top, whatever, five, six, seven teams, they can play and beat anybody, Mount Carmel, anybody in 4A. They did it all year. But man, once you get past the top, I don't know what the magic number is, eight, nine teams, it's definitely not double digits. that 3A is playing, it is just simply easier to navigate the state tournament trail. You know, you do not have to win and beat three, four, two or three really good ranked teams to get to Champaign. You know, and your point on St. Pat's, they had a great season. They played their best basketball at the end. But, I mean, you go through who they beat, you know, starting with the big wins over Alcott and Intrinsic Charter, followed by Fenwick and Peyton in the sectional. You know, that didn't, if you're doing a resume boost, that doesn't do anything for you. So I get that. But, you know, back to, you know, those champions in particular, you know, I give a lot of credit to Homewood Flossmoor for checking their egos at the door, because there are some ball dominant players who could go and put up big. Now, Gianni Cobb and Bryce Hurd put up big numbers. But they shared it. It wasn't the same player, and they showed that in the state finals and state semifinals. It wasn't the same player all the time for HF. You know, Jayden Tyler was huge in the Super and the championship game. I think he hit four threes and was instrumental in that win. And you know, they shared the load. And then there's that there's Carson Brownfield, who double figure score, who is also a very capable offensive player. And I just, my point is, all these guys kind of shared the wealth while also finding a way to come together over the course of the season, when we know they had three new pieces, three transfers in their starting lineup. And that's not easy. You don't know where that's going to go. We didn't know how it was going to play out with the likes of Thornton and HF. And to HF's credit, and Jameer Dismukes and the personnel that, and the mindset, they didn't flinch with having struggles chemistry wise. I think they got better with that over the course of the season, and it could, you know, it can go either way when you put this group of players together like that. And they kind of, the trajectory and the arrow was always pointing up, and I keep going back to their credit, you know, finishing it off with the two wins in Champaign.
Yeah, and big credit. I thought Mac Hagemaster, the big kid, the transfer from Lincoln Way East, you know, you can't find it in the box score. If you look, there's no, you know, he only had one block and, you know, you can't see it, but his presence down low and just the raw effort he put in against that Normal size was just huge. They were never able to get in any kind of rhythm or flow Normal, you know, underneath the basket. Now, I thought he played so well in that title game. And then when you've got the other guys, like you mentioned, it wasn't just that Jayden Tyler hit four threes. He only took five. He was four of five and Hurd was three of four. I mean, that's what you want to see in a state championship game. If you're a Vikings fan, they came out hot. They looked great. And it was a much different from the new Trier semi, which was a real struggle for them. They did not shoot well there, but, you know, came out and got one. I thought Hagemaster was good in that too. And Mac Hagemaster, he's the type of kid, he's a Lewis recruit. He would go whole games where he kind of checked out sometimes after after 3 or 5 minutes and didn't come back in or this and that. And, you know, he kept his head up, and when they needed him against specific big men, I thought he did a really nice job.
Yeah. And you know, that HF Nutrier, the one thing I know we had a little debate on whether that game would be close. And I just, the one thing, and I think a lot of people, because of how Nutrier plays with their shooting and when they look really good, they're making shots, hitting threes, scoring points. But as I talked about going into the state tournament weekend, that underrated aspect for Nutrier was that defense. You know, they held, it made things difficult for HF. HF only scored 40 points, and they had a squeak out of 40-35 win. But that's a credit to Nutrier and what they do defensively.
I think it was a 5-point win over against, or 5-point loss to Curie too, at tops, I think, with 4 or 5 points. So I think Nutrier ends up losing to Curie NHF by a combined 10 points. That's pretty impressive. And Kirkpatrick, boy, did he have a nice game for them. The sophomore again, Christopher Kirkpatrick, really kind of one of the big stars of the playoffs.
Well, yeah. In the second half of the season, he really turned the corner, really adapted his game, that combination of scorer and distributor at the point guard position, and with the weapons that they have on the perimeter, you know, that was needed. So you know, and speaking of defense, and you dip down to 3A, I know it's not the most fun thing to talk about or the sexy thing to talk about, but I mean, it is just what DePaul has done here. And I wrote about it in a post tournament column or a wrap up of the state tournament. But I mean, Mike, they have, you know, they jumped up in class from 2A to 3A and didn't miss a beat. I think this team was better than last year's team. This year's defense, I think, was better than last year's defense. And I think just as that if there's one difference making element of any team that's out there, it was DePaul's defense, and everybody struggled with it. Everybody had problems, and it didn't matter if it was regular season. It didn't matter if it was 3A teams or 4A teams. You know, their only two losses of the year came to the two teams that played in the state championship game in 4A, and they were decimated by injuries against Normal. They were, by the time the second half was playing out, they were down three of their top six players when they lost in double overtime. You know, I cannot remember if they were shorthanded with the HF game or not, but that's an unbelievable overall run that they've been on here in 2 years. And you can extend it. You want to include those state trophies from, you know, previous years in 2A and in 3A. I don't know the years in front of me. Like the last, what, 5-6 years, they've got 4 state trophies. So DePaul's doing things that the Chicago Catholic League, I think, is needed, like a team to step up and win big games when it mattered most in March. And DePaul, you know, was able to do that.
Well, what's never going to be remembered, which is kind of unfortunate, I think we've actually not mentioned it enough, the best team of the bunch is the one that didn't even get to go to state.
All right.
The best DePaul team.
Oh, I got what you're saying. Yes. Well, they were the Chipotle champions. Yeah.
I mean, that was the best team out of all these in my mind by far. And they didn't get a chance to play state.
I think they are because they're the most eye-pleasing DePaul team.
They had the best player. They had a guy.
T.Y. Johnson. And they had probably and Rasheed Bello were two dynamic players. You know, I don't think that team was as sound defensively as this year. I just think this, just watching them over and over this year, Mike, that people just could not, they got bullied. They got out muscled. They could not operate their offenses. And it's hard to, do you know what I mean? It's just hard to it's not as clear as all this other stuff that comes with basketball. And I just think they made teams uncomfortable, and it wasn't just like spurts of it. They did it all year long, you know, and that's what they relied on and was the backbone of that team. But yeah, I mean, you have a regular season that year, and I can't remember. I would assume they were 2A then, right? That year, the Chipotle.
I would assume as well, yeah. But I
you're talk, yeah, no. Probably another state trophy.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's going to be forgotten, you know, because there's just nowhere. The IHSA, if you've noticed, they don't even put up. I thought this was weird, and I think it's wrong. If you look at like the lists of state champions, those years have just been taken away. So when you read, you can't even tell there weren't state tournaments that year unless you look at the year numbers. There's no lines for them.
Oh,
it's just empty now. It's just. They just like gloss over it. To me, that strikes me as weird.
It doesn't say like no state champion or
exactly. It doesn't say anything. Before it said no state tournament due to COVID. That's gone.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know when that changed, but it's like those 2 years are just literally wiped from everyone's collective memory. It's very weird to me. I don't. Yeah. I don't like that. Because they used to have the other. Because they played some of the state tournament too that year.
Yeah, do they take that down too?
Well, it's not listed on the, I don't think so. I assume that's still there, but you'd think you'd at least put like a link up to that. I don't know. I don't like how it's
so handled. In the basketball records menu where it's the state series information results, it still does say the state series was canceled due to COVID-19 pandemic.
Okay, good. But yeah, it doesn't say that on just the list of
champions.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Yep.
That's kind of creepy to me. I guess my big DePaul thing was, I don't think I've ever seen, I mean, definitely not in one of the bigger classes. I think if I remember right from the box score, what do you call it? The AJ Chambers came in for like 2 or 3 minutes and that was it in the title game. I mean, and that wasn't until I think maybe the fourth quarter, the same five dudes played the whole title game other than like 2 or 3 minutes, which is pretty wild on a college court and that intense, you know, against Mount Carmel. Yeah, that was done. Jack Gleason was sitting next to me and he was noting, he was like, they haven't subbed yet. And it was pretty wild, especially considering like you talked about, you know, the defensive effort.
I mean, unique. That DePaul HF game, I mean, they were up double digits at one point. DePaul was, and I can't remember who went down injured.
They finished with third string guys in against HF.
DePaul.
Yeah, DePaul had, because guys were hurt and there were foul issues, I think.
Yeah, and they were up double digits, and my point is this: they were really close to being 37-0, and that. You know, it is what it is. They got their title, but you know, I thought another part of the state tournament that was nice to see was some new blood. You know, Mount Carmel. We talked about that. Their first trip for decades. You know, a Mount Zion who we might not be done with. They in small spurts. They looked very good, and you know.
Very they were, small spurts.
They were new.
I was disappointed. I'm not gonna lie.
They came out in the first half and looked okay.
JC Anderson's first 3 minutes were fantastic. Yes.
Yeah.
And then it was all downhill.
Yeah. You know, but we know that what they were capable of with the young. I mean, you don't know how young teams, first time ever. I mean, that's a young group. They're all back. They played Metamora tough, obviously, during the regular season. So I just, you know, HF story is nice. They haven't been down there forever. Palatine, obviously, first time ever. So there was some fresh new blood. It was kind of odd and weird how the public league was absent from 3A, 4A. You know, it's just, we're just not used to it. It's just not a regular thing. And without their presence, you know, the Catholic League, there it was, poof. They had two teams, and they were playing each other in a state championship.
My favorite game of all of them, kind of surprising, surprised me. It was Hope Academy against Mounds Meridian on Thursday morning. I think it was the best 1A state game I've ever seen. I'm sure of that. And considering it was 9:30 in the morning, starting this up, I had extremely low expectations. It was such a high overall level of play. Athletes out there that'll be playing college basketball on both teams, young players that were playing well. I mean, I thought Taiwan Hunter at Hope Academy, I thought he was fantastic. You know, he was assisting, he was hitting threes, he was rebounding. And then the kind of the big story of the tournament was Antonio Flannoy Jr., the 18-year-old freshman. And he was he had 24 points. I think he had 12 boards in that game. He did not play so well then in the title game. They were really able to kind of trouble him. He got in foul trouble, but that was just, it was a really good game. Back and forth. I wasn't sure who was going to win it until the end. And yeah, I felt bad. Hope Academy. We talked about it a bit in the last podcast, but definitely slept on them all season. That will not be happening. We're on next season. They're going to be back. Their best players back. Taiwan Hunter was just a sophomore. And Ronnie Fields really has something going there. Hope Academy will be a fun team to monitor over the next few years. And it'll be interesting to see if this kind of helps them maybe get some kids for next year as well. And
Phillips too. Phillips, four starters back, you know, and including their best, their key players.
Guys,
EJ Martin and Amari Edwards and Phoenix Childs. And, you know, they clearly are better. I saw them one time during the regular season. So I saw them once. They were clearly better than I in pure champagne than I had previously seen them. So they will be a top 25 team the preseason next year for sure.
Yeah, I was very surprised. I'd seen them a bunch, but I'd never seen Phoenix Childs play like that. And I guess he was really good in the Super too. He had a fantastic three final games of his season, hitting shots, and that's going to be, I don't know, where is he from?
Well, they had some weird scorers this year, and I'm not sure, you know, who was in games and who wasn't, but you know, this was a team that played, you know, they beat Lincoln Park, they played Richwoods, which I had forgotten about, really tough right around Christmas, you know, and then they would have these like lopsided blowout losses.
The Curie game was the worst game I covered all year.
Yeah, Curie drilled them. I think DeKalb drilled them at Christmas.
Yeah,
I think they played them in the championship game at the DeKalb holiday tournament. So they've had some odd scores.
They were missing a couple guys for one of those big games. I think after technicals and stuff, and a lot of new faces coming together, and they're young. So I mean, it's understandable. But boy, yeah, like you said, by the time you saw them this weekend, they were firing on all cylinders.
Was there a discussion? Please tell me that you talked to somebody about the format.
Oh, the format. Well, it certainly caused a lot of commotion on Twitter when I did my usual third place game, whatever. But I have not heard any. I know I saw Matt Troha responded to some people on Twitter about it, and there has just been a lot of talk about it. I don't know what the next
steps are. You can't play semifinals at night. There's no point in playing. Let's think about. You don't play games all year at 9:30 a.m.
Yeah.
Okay, holiday tournament. December 26th, who cares? I mean, you can't play semifinal games at 9:30 a.m. You just can't.
It's goofy. And I got to say, for everybody thinking this is not all about me, this schedule could not be more perfect for me workflow-wise. I have no deadline issues at all until the title game of the last day. I am done at like 8 o'clock on Thursday and Friday. As far as my journalistic wants and needs, this is the perfect schedule because I have plenty of time to do everything. But just, yeah, like you said, from a basketball and a fan perspective, it's goofy. And remember now, they have to re-up with Champaign. The contract is over. And I expected to hear something maybe the last day. We did not. But
it sounds like it's a foregone conclusion that it's
exactly returning. But so I'm wondering if maybe, and this is not me talking to anybody, this is just me thinking, wondering if maybe the delay on that being official, maybe they're going to announce a format tweak or schedule tweak two at the same time or something. I don't know. But usually they do that on the last day, so.
Well, it's interesting this week that came out. I don't know if you saw it, how the IHSA is targeting 2026, 2027 for full shot clock implementation. Sign me up. Even in some of the games I watch down there, it's needed. It's ready. We need it.
I agreed, but I filed it under anything that far away. I'm not even counting my chickens. That's another lifetime away. Why is it going to, I mean, that's a long time.
Yeah. I wonder if we can speed it. 25-26 sounds like a nice, a much better plan, but I'll take what I can get.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah. My 26-27 season. That's like, whatever. Yeah. We'll see what happens in between now and then.
They're freshmen right now.
That's right.
Freshmen will play with a shot clock.
Jackson Davis and Davion Thompson were both there at State, not in the capacity I would have liked, but they were there picking up their All-State awards and stuff. So that was good. Oh, yeah, we got to hit that. I mean, oh, my gosh, the Catholic League. Horrible. Just horrible. Both Mount Carmel and DePaul. Remember when, like, Brooks was there 10 years ago? What if Brooks brought twice as many people as either one of them? It was bleak, and the 3A title game was horrific atmosphere. Just nobody in there seemed to be cheering for the games. They did have like their student sections on the court.
I just never anticipated a private school bringing many people, Mike.
There's many people, Joe, and then there's no one. It was horrible. they had their student sections, which were fine. So on TV, you probably saw, but there was nothing else. Like you look up, there was no one. It was, I mean, I would have thought definitely Mount Carmel. I wasn't expecting them to have like that, you know, suburban high school mass and up top. I'm not asking for that. I know that's not happening, but I would expect a smattering of adults. It was, and without the normal fans, if it hadn't been a Central Illinois school in the 4A title game, I'm a little worried about what it would have been like. That was, you know, because remember, the reason we're dealing with these 9:30 a.m. semis is because it's, we've forgotten this, I think, a lot of people. We're all in on championship
Saturday. Makes Saturday a big crowd.
Yeah.
You know, and in the last 2 years, it's come to fruition for the most part.
And Normal did it. I mean, Normal, oh, wow, congratulations. That's the most people I've seen anybody have at a state championship game from one school than I can remember. They were terrific. They were all over the place. It was crazy when the 4A tournament, when the title game started, you know, they're back to back 3 and 4. The first shot that went in, the whole place exploded and you felt like you were at a different event than you were at in the 3A game. It was a weird difference. But yeah, I got a big message from, I mean, the Catholic League got upset. I mentioned the Mount Carmel, you know, stuff, and I got a message. I don't know, here, I guess I can read it. This is from a, how should we describe this? It's from a Catholic League AD, but not one of the teams that was at stake. That's good, right? Because now you know.
Yes,
that's enough. Okay. Just a thought on the student attendance at the IHSA state finals. It's difficult to get students to the semifinal game. Requires students to get out of school, chaperones, and subs for teachers chaperoning. Spring sport athletes have practice, and the IHSA has a rule that there has to be a certain number of practices before the first contest, so we can't just cancel practice. And then there's the unknown if the team will be playing one or two games on Friday, which is a challenge for planning. Do students get hotels if their team advances? IHSA should consider a Saturday-Sunday state finals if they cared about student attendance at state championships.
Ugh.
There are probably many reasons why the IHSA can't do Saturday and Sunday, but there are many reasons why schools can't get big student sections to the Friday night games. Which, this is all good info.
You lost me on Sunday.
Yeah, well, you lost me on, I thought the student sections were okay. I mean, they weren't big, but everybody else, where's everybody else?
Well, every student section has to deal with that, though, in every school. It's not
exactly
private school.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's and I just think it's really unfair, and I won't use other words I could be using, that nobody wanted to mention that I was the only person that seemed to bring it up, because oh boy would we be hearing about it when a CPS team doesn't bring it's like all we hear about at the state tournament, and the Catholic League deserves to hear it the same way it would be mentioned if it was CPS schools. End of my rant there.
Yeah, I don't like the format. I don't like that Friday night. There's nothing. I think it's easily fixable though. And I went on the last podcast and said it. You know, I know you don't like third place games. You don't want them. I don't think they hurt anything as long as they're not ruining anything else. And in this case, they're ruining other things. And so that's why you want to play the third place game. I don't care. Play the third place game. Hand out a third place trophy, fourth place trophy, whatever. But just put it in the time slots where nobody's watching anyway. No one cares about the games. You want to keep playing them, play them. But put them in the morning. Just, Mike, it's easy. Just put them in the morning. Put them at 8:30, 9 o'clock, and play them at 9 and 10:30. Be done with them. Nobody goes to them. Nobody watches them. Nobody cares about them. And they're still going to play them, then put them there. And then let's have our real games at real times. There's my rant.
Couldn't hurt. I was I'm going to Cincinnati this weekend. Wife's from there. And because I guess I'm a sicko, I did look up the Ohio State basketball tournament to see what was going on this weekend. And they got 2 weeks to go.
Oh,
so a lot to go. And guess what they don't have? Third place games. I actually started looking around. It seems like I haven't seen a number, but a lot of the states don't have them. Most of the ones I checked. in the Midwest, so they're not a super common thing. Let's see, anything else? We got about 9 minutes left. Anything else we want to hit about this weekend? I thought Joe mentioned it. I guess I put it online today in his notebook, but EJ Horton, I think maybe the biggest stock riser for me, out of the whole tournament.
Oh yeah.
I thought
he's, because of where he's playing and not a lot of eyes have been on him. You know, a ton of people haven't been talking about Phillips and, or, you know, he is in the college radar and my scouting and stuff like that. But, you know, as one of the state stars, yeah, he's a bona fide, legitimate. Not only is he he's got some dynamic ability, you know, with his athleticism and his style of play. And I think, yeah, to what you just said, it's clearly he was, you know, the breakout player. It was great to see, you know, this tournament did not have, you know, people. I did a radio show on one of the days, and they mentioned to me on the radio show, so Joe, is it true the university, there's not one player for the University of Illinois to even watch this weekend? Because it's in Champaign, it makes sense. And I'm like, there's, you know, the two big stars are head of the Big Ten, but they're seniors and going to Rutgers and Northwestern. So you're trying to find, there is a lack of high-powered stars that we are accustomed to over decades and decades of state tournament basketball in the state, and it was not present this past weekend.
Yeah, you know, I hadn't even thought about that. You just mentioned it, but yeah, I did not see Underwood there. They were there definitely the last year for a while. Cole Serta, I know they watched in the year before. A couple other guys I wanted to mention. Joe also wrote about Makai Kavame, and I was really impressed with him last year at State. He's kind of been my favorite DePaul guy, I guess, and he's grown considerably since then. And he grabbed that game literally by the junk at the end when Mount Carmel was coming back in a way you don't see a lot of seniors do. And you know, he's a younger kid, and it just in the scoring, he did score this time, but he's not a big scorer. I think you wrote that he was like their third leading scorer this year. But yeah, when that game mattered, when things weren't going to Paul's way, when the defense wasn't holding anymore and they couldn't stop Cerevino, Kavame settled that down. He just killed a ton of clock, which isn't easy to do, you know, on a stage like that. He was really, really impressive in that title game, especially. One I'd mention, Jaden Tyler, a Hoops Report favorite, really had a nice run and was fantastic in both games, I thought, at State. And this one, my third guy, might be a bit of a surprise, because his numbers were kind of bad shooting wise, but I was really impressed with Noah Mister in both games. I think he kind of, a lot of the same stuff I said about Kavame, Mister did too. And I think Noah Mister is just going to be an electric player for the next 2 years. I think he's got a nice high ceiling.
Yeah. It was an opportunity for some, you know, lesser known guys to kind of raise their stock and grab some headlines and attention and make the most of an opportunity on a big stage. And, you know, all those guys, you know, you mentioned are coming back, and it's just going to be interesting to see with the target on their back. DePaul's used to it, but HF will have a target on their back. Phillips for sure, you know, playing the public league will have that bullseye as a state champion, and with these returning players and how they handle that.
Joe, we got about 5 minutes left here. Joe and I hit this briefly, and Joe will have a story coming up pretty soon, but next year, oh boy, I have never had such a long list of teams to keep an eye on. I've already got 25 to 40 teams down here on a list. We took our lumps this season, and a lot of basketball was pretty ugly, and it's because we watched a lot of very young teams. Well, hopefully over the next two seasons, that kind of money we put in the bank is going to pay off, because there's a lot of teams out there with most of their team back. It's going to be, to me, kind of an easy Super 25 to do in the preseason, although I'm not sure about the number one spot. Obviously, we have to see what happens with all the transfers. But right now, what do you think, Joey? Got HF?
There's just a number of teams that, you know, have 4 and 5 starters back.
Yeah, it's wild. Yeah.
You know, and get them experience. But, you know, real quick, I mean, this story is going to be out, as Mike said, here in the next week or two. But, you know, I listed them alphabetically of teams that will be top 15, most likely. You know, Bennett, Bloom's got a lot back.
Yeah.
Bolingbrook, their two best players are back. DePaul, we've talked about. HF, we've talked about. Kenwood, you know, with Devin Cleveland and Alex Alston's back. Lincoln Park, got four starters back. Marist won 29 games. They've got four starters back. Nutrier has three really key players back that were young. Niles North, all five starters back. Phillips, we talked about. Rolling Meadows won 21 or 22 games, all five starters back. You know, Romeoville has some Division I talent ready to step up. You know, keep an eye on Simeon. You know, Warren with Jackson Davis, and they have three starters back. And then Whitney Young, you know, they've got the bulk of their team back. So, and that list can go on, you know, with, you know, keep an eye on teams like Rich and Kankakee with some young players. I got a text, Mike, today from a college coach, and it just said, I have to go back. Worst talent ever in Illinois? ? And I said, well, I mean, the older talent isn't there. The depth of Division I is not there. The high profile guys, a lot of them left. But I do believe, and it's still kind of nurturing these freshmen and sophomores. There's more that are coming, but I do feel like it for the first time in a while, I can be kind of ultra positive about what's on the horizon versus like, ugh, I don't think it's getting any better. So that is I just thought the talent level overall this year was just, I'm not going to say the worst I've ever seen. It's just below average for what Illinois high school basketball is accustomed to. And a part of that is this, I mean, I don't want to pick on the seniors, but the senior class just isn't real good.
Yeah. And that's not going to change really from the look of it. It's going to be another down year with the seniors, but after that, look out. Everywhere I went, all around the area, there was a sophomore that could play. So that's very exciting. I'm sure there'll be some others that just played at the sophomore level coming through, and I'm excited about next year. It should be an awful lot of fun. We got Jackson Davis and Davion Thompson, hopefully, and who knows going to come back, Joe. Will I have another psychopathic season with the fears back as a senior?
And don't forget Devin Cleveland in that mix too. I know
Yeah, and who knows? That's the big story to watch over the summer. Spring, summer, we'll see what goes on at Kenwood. I've heard no developments. That investigation's still ongoing, so nothing else has happened that I'm aware of. But yeah, that's definitely worth keeping an eye of on the Kenwood situation. And thanks for listening all season, everybody. And enjoy your spring, enjoy your summer, and we will be back next season.